from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. For the first time in the modern era, more millennials, Americans 18 to 34, live with their parents than with partners or spouses, nearly one-third at home, with mom, with dad. This is new, not seen since records started in 1880. It means a different start for young people, a different life for their parents. This hour On Point, millennials staying home. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Is this you, 20-something, 30-something, out of school, living at home? Is this all right? What's put you there? And parents, what do you think? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Washington is Kim Parker, Director of Social Trends Research at the Pew Research Center. They've just crunched the numbers from a 2014 census report. You can read Pew's analysis on millennials living with their parents at our website, onpointradio.org. Kim Parker, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thank you so much for having me.
Lay the numbers out for us. What's the trend line? I mean, we all know that more millennials, it seemed, started living at home after around the time of the Great Recession, and that made a kind of intuitive sense. Maybe people imagined that would be just a short-term thing, but is it? What's happening, Kim?
Sure. Well, one thing to just mention right away is that the recession has something to do with this, but not everything to do with this. So the trend in the increased share of young adults living at home predates the recession. And in the post-recession or recovery era, we've seen it continue to increase. So just to put some numbers on the intro that you gave the listeners, in 2014, we found that 32.1% of adults ages 18 to 34 were living with a parent, either one parent or both parents. Mm-hmm. And a slightly smaller share were living with a spouse or partner. And this represents an important tipping point in the lives and living arrangements of young adults. As you mentioned, dating back to 1880, when the government first started collecting these types of records, living with a romantic partner had been the dominant living arrangement, and this is just no longer the case.
What was the peak of Americans moving out young, moving in with a spouse or, you know, with a partner?
Yeah, so the peak was around 1960. And the share living with a romantic partner then among 18 to 34-year-olds was 62%, so really twice as high as it is now. And, you know, over the decades since then, there's been, you know, obviously an increase in the share living with parents, but a more significant decrease in the share living with a spouse or partner. So that's really been the most significant change that we've seen.
Let's just sit with that one for a second, because that's doubled. 62%, you're saying, in 1960, of Americans in this age range would be out of the parents' family home and living with a spouse or partner. 62%, and now it's 31.6%, I think I'm reading here.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
That looks like a monumental shift to me. What was going on then that's not going on now? Or what's going on now that wasn't going on then?
Well, there's a lot going on. And what I think is really interesting about this study is that it kind of pulls together the impact of several key demographic trends. And, you know, we can sort of unpack those as we go through. But
sure,
one important thing to point out is that an important part of this is that young adults are marrying later in life. So it's not that they're not marrying at all, but the median age of first marriage has gone up a lot. So in 1960, it was, you know, around 20 years old, 22 years old that young adults were marrying. Today, the median age of first marriage for women is 27, and for men it's 29. So that's part of what's going on here. So when you take a snapshot, you're going to find fewer young adults married now because they're going to marry later on. But it's also the case that some young adults may be foregoing marriage altogether. And a growing share are raising children or forming families outside of marriage, and others are just living on their own. And our research projects that by the time today's millennials reach middle age, about a quarter of them will have never married, and that would be a historic high. So just to recap that, part of it is that they're marrying later, but another part of it is that they may not marry at all.
So if you don't marry at all, then you're not living with a partner, so there's a lower percentage, so it comes down closer to the percentage that are still at home. Let's turn and look at that. The dynamics that are leading younger Americans now to either stay home or go back home, what you're looking at as old as 34 here, what's pushing in that direction? We can easily imagine, but you tell us. What do you see, Kim?
Well, part of it, it's important to talk about some of the demographic differences among young adults, mm-hmm. where there are certain groups that are more likely to be living at home, and that helps us understand the forces that are driving some of this. So there's a strong correlation between employment status and living at home. So young adults who are unemployed are more likely to be living with their parents. There's also a correlation between wages and living at home. And as wages have gone down, particularly for young men in recent decades, the share of young men living at home has gone up. And the gender factor we should not ignore, because young men are definitely more likely than young women to be living with their parents. And young men have borne the brunt of these economic factors that I mentioned, job holding and wages, to a greater extent than young women have.
So on the jobs front, have jobs not come back in this? I mean, the unemployment rate is now down somewhere around 5%. And I know there are many others who have left the job market and are not in it. Still, apples to apples, 5% is not a not out of line with historic periods in which many fewer people lived with their parents, young people.
Yep, that's true, and that's a really good point. Job holding among young adults is not as strong as it is, and they took a real hit during the recession, so it's taken them longer to climb back. But the other thing that I haven't mentioned is educational attainment, and there's a strong link between educational attainment, marriage, and living arrangements. And young adults with a bachelor's degree are not that likely to be living in their parents' home, and they're much more likely to be married. So we see this sort of, you know, snowball effect, particularly for young men. If they don't have a college degree, they have less prospects in the job market, lower wages, and a higher likelihood of living at home. And that group of young men is part of what's driving this trend.
Do you have the number in front of you for college degree holders then who are living at home with their parents? For the overall country, 18 to 34, you say it's 32%+. What about for college grads?
Mm-hmm. So it's a big difference. Young adults with a bachelor's degree, among that group, 18 to 34-year-olds, 19% are living in their parents' home, versus 36% who don't have a college education. So that's a big difference right there. And young adults with a bachelor's degree are much more likely to be living with a spouse or partner. 46% of them did in 2014, versus only 27% of the young adults without a bachelor's degree.
This is interesting. We've talked about this before, about the difficulty that people in some parts of the economic ladder were having partnering up, marrying or choosing to marry, or feeling that they had the resources to marry. But that's an enormous gap right there. Between college grads, you say 19%, not college grads, or 36% at home with their parents. That is the country. That seems to me a very big divergence in the way we are living, a sort of historically atypical degree of divergence.
Mm-hmm. And we've seen that trend. If you look at marriage rates among all adults, you look back to 1960, a college graduate, someone with some college experience, and a high school graduate, those groups were all equally likely to be married. Now, if you look at marriage rates today, you see that there's a big gap between college graduates and those who didn't graduate from college in terms of marriage. So marriage is still the norm for college graduates, but it's much less so among those without a college degree.
I'm looking here that incomes or wages adjusted for inflation have plunged 34% for the typical young man from 2000 to 2014. That's a one-third loss in wages, inflation adjusted. That's a pretty big hit. Is it because they just can't afford to be out on their own?
I think that's a big part of it, yes. And also in some of the other research we've done about marriage and attitudes towards marriage, we've found that for women, so you've got these trends going on for men, particularly with wages and job holding. Young women have been more ascendant in these recent decades in terms of their educational attainment and the types of opportunities that they have in the marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
But for young women today, the thing that they're looking for in a spouse is somebody with a steady job. And so you put those two things together and you can see that there may be some young women who aren't married, but it's because they may be having difficulty in some cases finding a partner that meets that criteria.
Kim, what about rents? We hear a lot about high rents, as particularly in some cities that many young people may be drawn to. Is there a mismatch between where rents are and what they're earning, their capacity to have their own place?
I think there may be. Our research doesn't go into that, but I've read in several of the articles that have been written about our report in the last couple of days, people have raised that issue. And, you know, I certainly have read anecdotally about high rents in, you know, many metropolitan areas around the U.S. So I would assume that that's probably playing into this as well.
What about student loans? We hear so much about that. One might think that that was a drag on people getting out into their own place. On the other hand, you've got many more college grads not living at home with their parents than non-college grads.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of student debt among young adults who don't complete college. So that's another thing to keep in mind. So obviously, many college graduates have heavy debt today, much more so than in the past. And that makes it difficult for them to get their financial footing and to set up their own households. But if you think of a young adult who took out loans to go to college and then didn't complete the degree, that's even makes it obviously even more difficult.
More young Americans 18 to 34 living at home with their parents than out with partners or spouses for the first time since the records began being kept in 1880. At the Pew Center, are you making judgments about this, Kim? Are you saying this is a problem or this is just the way it is? The culture, the country, the economy is changing. Are you judging this?
No. Not at all. Just the facts. We're just trying to sort of shed light on this interesting set of facts and the way that these sort of parallel trends have kind of converged into this impact on one of the most basic aspects of someone's life, where they call home. So, no, not making judgments at all, although our research does point to the fact that economic well-being is higher among people who are married, especially in couples where there are two incomes. I mean, that just makes sense because there's more money coming into the household. But I think it's just more interesting to look at it in terms of a major societal change and a tipping point.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about a third of millennials, nearly, now living at home with their parents. First time in recorded history of this since 1880 that more Americans of that age, 18 to 34, living with parents than with romantic partners or spouses. And we're asking why so many and why for so long, asking what you think about it. Kim Parker is with us, Director of Social Trends Research at the Pew Research Center. You can join us as well. What do you think this is all about? Is this a failure to launch? Is it just a cultural change? Is it economic headwinds? What about partnering up and getting your own place? Is that still the top goal? And parents, what do you make of all this? Is it welcome? Is it worrying? Is it wearying? January 2016 pilot episode of NBC's sitcom Crowded, two millennial daughters both move home, kind of surprising, at once.
I'm not getting any acting jobs, and my YouTube videos don't get enough hits. Being an adult is hard. Plus, I miss you guys, so I was wondering.
Hello, all.
Forgive the surprise.
Shay, what are you doing here?
I'm moving back home.
What?
But I told you I was coming here today to move back home.
What?
Yes, but I reasoned that the cumulative impact on them would be reduced if it were simultaneous rather than staggered.
Everybody moving back home there in Crowded. Count on Hollywood to pick up on the trend. Kim, we've got lots of response here online, and it's interesting. I mean, there are people who sound like they're not so happy with it, and others who seem just fine with it. I don't know. Bill says he lived with his mom till he was 27. Economic circumstances made it mutually beneficial. Barbara says the pre-industrial revolution world has a lot to recommend it. Maybe it's time for families to remember what family means. Joe, not so happy, says this is what you get when jobs are being sent to Mexico, China, India. But Darwin says stay home as long as you can. Pay down your debts and save, save, save. Michael says he doesn't live at home anymore, but he spends way too much on rent these days. And you've got even – Justin writes us on Twitter and says, sometimes I feel like I missed out on something culturally by being a millennial who moved out at 18 and didn't have that experience. Truly says, I love the idea of multi-generational homes. It used to be the norm, family caring for family. Kim Parker, please stand by in Washington. Jillian White joins us right now as well from Washington, senior associate editor at The Atlantic. She's been reporting on millennials. You can link to all that at our website, onpointradio.org. Jillian White, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
What do you think of this? Is it a bummer? Is it mortifying? Is it a positive thing? This is a big change.
It is a big change, but I think, as Kim said earlier, what we're looking at is kind of a societal shift, and everything that's old becomes new again, right? So we have a ton of different things that are playing into this, which is one of the things that I love about the Pew report, that it talks about all of the different factors that lend to a larger group of 18 to 34-year-olds living at home. Yep. But I think one of the things that is making it possible to go home and stay home for a longer period of time is that the recession and kind of the paltry recovery that we had made it a lot less stigmatized. I think if this had been the early 2000s and a 24, 25, 26-year-old said that they had been living with their parents, you know, people would have had something to say. I think now, at least among millennials, hearing that a 25 or 26-year-old is living at home and potentially saving some money and paying down some debt, that isn't a crazy thing to hear, and I think people feel less judgmental about it.
So if you're out among millennials and people are talking about their living circumstances and somebody's at home, it's just no big deal? It's just one way of doing it?
Yeah, I think people don't feel as freaked out about it. I think it's also important to remember that there are lots of people who feel like they went ahead and went to school and they now have large debt sums, or they went to school and weren't able to finish, as Kim mentioned, and or have all of this debt. And, you know, people are trying to be more financially responsible. I think they see what happened during the recession when their parents or relatives lost a ton of money. And they want to make sure that when they do step out on their own, they step out in a responsible way and that they are not struggling to pay rent in a big city where, you know, you can end up paying $2,000 for a closet. So I think it's just a little harder to be judgmental about somebody's situation than it maybe once was.
You were home for 6 months or so when you went back to grad school. I don't know how old you were then. How did you find it just in terms of family relations? I mean, we can't, you know, extrapolate from your experience to everybody, but a lot of people are spending more time, you know, in their 20s and 30s, that cheek by jowl with their parents than we have seen in many decades here. How was it for you, Jillian?
Yeah, absolutely. Of course, my experience is completely personal and anecdotal, but it was absolutely fine. It was in some ways very fun. When I was 18 and I moved to college, I did not move back in with my parents till I was 25 and in grad school for that 6 month period. So I'd been out on my own for a pretty long period of time, but it was great. I think I enjoyed being around them again and being a little taken care of and having some meals cooked while I tried to finish school. And I think they enjoyed having someone else there to do things like help them set up their Netflix account and take them out to cool restaurants and show them, you know, parts of D.C. and the city that they weren't necessarily used to hanging out in. So for us, it was a really mutually beneficial relationship. And I think also one of the things that I hear from my friends is that a lot of people who are working and are living at home with their parents while they pay down some student loans or pay down credit card debt or just save up a bit is that they are contributing a bit to the house. You know, they are maybe buying groceries or they are helping with a mortgage or they are contributing in other ways. So it's not necessarily always kind of the freeloading example that people give.
Kim Parker, Jillian White, please stand by in Washington. Lots of callers for you from around the country. Andrea in Framingham, Massachusetts. Andrea, you're on the air. What's your story?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
So I heard I had to call in. I'm 34. My husband's 35. And we have a two-year-old daughter. And we just moved out of my parents' house about a month ago.
How long had you been there, Andrea, before you moved out?
A little over a year. We were renting before and we wanted to buy a house, but we did not have enough money for a down payment and we had student loan debt. And I'm a stay-at-home mom by choice. And so we felt like instead of sticking her in daycare and having me work 40 hours a week to most likely break even, we wanted to move home with them. And it was actually a really amazing experience. My parents were empty nesters and they just had so much fun having us there and having my daughter.
What did they say when you first said, hey, hi, you know, we're 33 and 34, we've got a daughter, and we're moving back in with you? What was their initial response?
I think, I actually think my mom was a little bit worried because she runs a nursery school out of the house, and so it was definitely very crowded. There was a lot of, there's a lot of people coming in and out, and she...
Yeah, but talk about ready-made. She's got all the toys. She's all set up for one more. Why not?
I know, it's true. But I think at first we had to, like, set some ground rules because it's a small house. And, you know, they always said if we could have helped you put a down payment on a house, we would have done that. But instead, we'll help you by having you move in. So and it turned out to be just a memorable experience, something that I think as a family we'll never forget that we got a chance to do that and be together for a year.
It's a moving story in a way. And, Andrea, I really appreciate you sharing it. I mean, Jillian, there are grandparents who will have now spent a year living with their granddaughter, it went well for them. They were willing to sort of, suck it up and share a crowded house as a way to help their kids get going. But I can imagine a time not that long ago when that would sound really outside what we thought of as normative, Jillian.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think, again, this is what happens with the ebbs and flows and how we view things in society and cultural shifts, right? So when you have a kid, you spend ostensibly 18 years together at a minimum as a family unit. And then that kid moves out and supposedly becomes an adult on their own. And that can kind of shift the relationship that you have. So I think looking at it as a more intergenerational household and a shifting culture allows parents and children, and in this case, grandchildren, to get back together and kind of explore those relationships in adulthood in a different way and can strengthen those family bonds. And I think that hasn't always been an absurd thing to think about.
Kim Parker at Pew Research Center, are you surprised to hear that there's no stigma attached to this? I mean, does acceptance always follow numbers? I can imagine, I'm guessing, Kim, that you can remember a time when people would feel like, what, you're living with your parents? And it would be just kind of unthinkable for a bunch of people anyway. Are you surprised that there's not so much of that feeling now?
Yeah, I'm not really surprised. We actually found this in a survey that we did in 2012, where we asked young adults who were living with their parents about their level of satisfaction with their living arrangement, and they were highly satisfied with their living arrangement. There were really very few complaints. They were very optimistic about their own financial futures. And we also asked them about the impact that living back at home had had on their relationship with their parents.
Yeah.
And very few said that it had had a negative impact. Most said it had either had a positive impact or it hadn't really made much of a difference. So that suggested that, any stigma that, maybe was there in the past wasn't as commonplace today. And we also asked people whether or not they were living with their parents. Did they know somebody who had done that, another peer of theirs? And I think it was like 70% who said, sure, wow, I know someone who's been in that situation. So it's just so common, as Jillian said, it's just part of the fabric of our society these days. And I think that it really doesn't throw people for a loop very much anymore.
Libby in Austin, Texas. Libby, thank you for calling. You're on. What's your story?
Hi, Tom. So I wanted to refer back to being involved in higher education and the economy, and I'd like to tie in that there's also a problem with the job market focusing on higher education quality and value versus experience, because for my story especially, I have a single mother, and she's been a single mother since 92.
Okay.
And I lived with my mom for about 7 years, and I'm now 28, and my brother is 25 and still lives with her.
Mm-hmm.
And we have found that our issue is the cycle where we have to work full-time in order to afford to live in a city like Austin, even minimally.
Yep.
And that doesn't allow us time to continue our higher education. So we're stuck in that cycle of needing to work in order to be on our own.
Yeah.
And then not being able to continue higher education in order to improve our situation.
So is it by living at home, can you save enough money that you can, get out of that trap or not, Libby?
Well, it depends. In our situation, we were required to help out with our mom a lot, which is great, and we were happy to do it.
As in, pitch in on housing costs and so on.
Yeah, well, whatever mom says, of course, but most
okay.
of it was financial, monetary support, yes. But yeah, it gave us time to dip our toes back into it, but it's such a slow process that I'm just now out on my own, and I've been back out on my own for about 2 years now.
Yeah.
And my brother, unfortunately, has got a few more years ahead of him.
How do you feel about really paying the rent for yourself now? How does that work out? Do you sometimes think, gosh, I could save more if I was back home, or is it, well, at last, I'm on my own. I got my own place.
It's definitely more of the latter. I love my mom, but as she was just saying, it actually negatively impacted our relationship. She's a hoverer, as they say.
Well, 7 years is a long time when you're in your 20s to still be there, maybe.
That too. Exactly.
Yeah. Libby, I appreciate your sharing that story and that tension between working and needing the education, and how do you do both? Let me get one more right here. New Orleans. Hallie's calling. Hi, Hallie. What's your story? You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I love your show. I listen every day. I left school spring of 2008, and I moved into Chicago with four other people. We got an apartment.
Yeah.
We all lost our jobs fall of 2008.
Wow.
And it was a huge struggle to pay rent, to survive,
You know, I'd go through a whole month with $30 for food. I wish that there was a way that I could have moved home. I don't have a good relationship with my family. A few of the other people I lived with did, and now they're doing very well. They were able to pay down their loans and, you know, move on. And my question, though, is what are the demographics involved in this study? It seems that a lot of people who are talking about these issues are talking about them because now they're affecting young white people instead of, you know, marginalized people who've always had to live in intergenerational households.
That's a good question, Hallie, and I appreciate you bringing it up. And I also note, I mean, it's interesting that you wish you had had that option. It would have been helpful to you when all four people in your apartment lost their jobs at once in 08. That's a pretty rugged moment. Kim, what about demographics? Are there distinct differences between different strands of Americans, ethnic, racial, cultural, in terms of who's more or less likely to stay home, be home with parents?
Absolutely. There are big differences, and it's a really important point to make when you look at demographic groups. I mentioned earlier about the differences between men and women. And so we have a little chart in the report where we look at, for different groups, where the tipping point actually occurred from being more likely to live with parents than to live with a romantic partner.
Yeah.
That tipping point occurred for men in 2009, hasn't occurred for women yet. When you look at racial and ethnic groups, among black young adults in 1980, they were actually more likely to be living in their parents' home than living with a romantic partner. And for Hispanics, it was 2011. For whites, it hasn't occurred yet. So there are big differences by race and ethnicity. And then again, by educational attainment. Young adults without a high school degree, the tipping point occurred for them in 2006. They were more likely to be living with parents than living with a partner. For high school graduates, it was 2008. And for people with some college, it was 2010. And again, for people with a bachelor's degree, it hasn't occurred yet. So there are very important gaps across these demographic groups.
What about, Kim, the simple percentage of Americans 18 to 34 living at home with their parents or a parent? How does that break out by race, by ethnicity?
Yeah, so it's just
32.1% overall. Within that,
right.
What do you see?
Right. Let me see if I can get those. I don't have those numbers.
I finally
right
stumped Kim. I thought you were unstumpable. Well, you looked that up. Let me get one more call here.
I got it.
Sure.
Yeah. So for black and Hispanic young adults, among blacks, it's 36%.
Okay.
And 36 for Hispanics as well,
okay.
Whereas among whites, it's 30%. So that's, you know, it doesn't sound like a huge gap, but it's definitely statistically significant.
Yeah, significant, but it's not different worlds. I mean, percentage of whites, 18 to 34, living at home, 30%. Hispanic, 36. Black, 36.
Mm-hmm.
Not different worlds. Jillian, does that surprise you that there's some kind of a gap there? Do you see it? Do you move across demographic lines enough to witness it?
I don't think that surprises me at all. I think, as the caller, Hallie, mentioned, that's something that has been true for quite some time. And I think that when you look at the compounding factors of what would cause a young person to stay at home or go back home, it's not surprising that some of those factors would be more prevalent for a longer period of time in a black or Hispanic culture. So when we talk about unemployment, when we talk about earnings, when we talk about the inability to finish a bachelor's degree, those are things that have been more prevalent in communities of color for some time. So it would make sense to me that the percentages of that of living at home are higher for people of color.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the third, almost a third, of millennials now living at home with their parents, asking why so many and why for so long. Kim Parker is with us from the Pew Research Center. They're out with a big new report on all this off of census data. Jillian White is with us, senior associate editor at The Atlantic, where she writes a lot about millennials. You can join us as well. What's it mean that this is becoming so commonplace? And does it mean the same thing, whatever the demographics are? Does it mean different things for different threads of our society? Lots of comments online, and it's sort of all over the place on this. I mean, some people great with it, happy they could save money. Others happy to get out, and then different attitudes along the way. I mean, Marcus writes to us, says, what if the American dream was just a sales job by the real estate industry to get everybody to buy their own house? Okay. You've got others. Here's one that just came in on the website. What if you've got a boatload of college debt, a degree in a field, you can't get a job, you have to work in some low-paid service job in the mall? How can you afford rent, let alone a mortgage? Matt writes to us. He says, to be honest, I think the nuclear family is a bit of a waste. We send our grandparents off to nursing homes, barely see our other family when we're away, get into massive debt trying to recreate the same basic homes in our individual ways. I think we'd have much healthier families if we all shared a big house and saved on resources. Maybe that's where we're headed. Some pushback as well here. Goder says, in my experience with these folks in the workplace, and I guess he means the younger folks at home, they're staying home because they want their mommy to do stuff for them. Plus, that's where their video games are. This would seem to be the result of a youth of helicopter parenting. When in doubt, always look for someone else to do some stuff for them. Jillian, is that, I don't know, is that boomer bitterness? Or what do we got here? Gen X?
I mean, I think there are, of course, examples of people who are staying at home because they enjoy their parents doing everything for them, and perhaps their parents are. But from the vast number of people that I know who have been at home for any period of time after they graduated college or after they hit the age of maturation, it hasn't really been about sitting around and allowing their parents to take care of them as much as it's just been a wise financial decision, or the only financial decision they could make. You know, I think when you take a look at rents in a lot of major cities where a lot of folks are trying to find jobs, it's really, really expensive. And there have been many reports that have come out talking about the increase of rental burden on households and young renters. And I think when you're taking a look at spending, you know, 40 or 50% of your already not great income just to keep a roof over your head, and then you add on things like student loans and car payments or things of that nature, yeah, sometimes it makes a little more sense to go ahead and continue working and just be at home.
Lemlar writes to us, she's frustrated by this whole, by the conversation. What about the issue of choice and the very different living at home experiences by class and race? A person choosing to live at home while in grad school, completely different than a high school dropout with no job and little hope for the future. And Kim, as you point out, that's where a lot of the living at home comes from.
Yes, I think it's a trend that's prevalent, but for different reasons for different groups, and it's important to keep that in mind. I think there was the caller earlier was I don't know if it was Libby or Hallie that talked about difficulties for young adults who don't have a college degree in terms of, you know, being able to find steady work and have high wages. And one thing that we haven't really touched on is the kind of structural changes in the economy and the shift towards an information-based economy and the real necessity of having a college degree in order to land, you know, a secure and high-paying job. And that's, you know, become increasingly challenging, I think, for young adults today that don't have a college degree.
Samantha's calling from Charleston, South Carolina. So, Samantha, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
So I was kind of on the opposite side. I grew up with a single mother, and I have two siblings. Her rule was basically that we were out by the time we were 18. And I have found through, you know, communicating with most of my peers who have lived with their parents beyond 22 and 23, yeah, and the majority of them have, that are, like, I'm better prepared than they are, and I hate to say it like that, and I know it's going to sound like I'm tooting my own horn, but it just is what I've found. Like, their practical life skills, making deadlines, understanding, like, the general cynicism when you fail to meet certain expectations, you know, out in society. It just seems they have a slightly skewed, perhaps somewhat unhelpful life view.
So you're kind of going along with the one commenter online who said, I don't know, they're pampered or not, not stepping up because they've still got home behind them.
Something to that effect. And at the same time, I'm 28. I sympathize, you know, with my generation. I understand plight of not having money. I totally get it. But I do think that whether or not they're intending to have this happen, it is hampering them, unfortunately, and in a lot of really crucial ways that, you know, we didn't see with previous generations. And I could be wrong.
It's interesting. I mean, we get it. It's your view on things, and it wasn't your experience. You were out at 18, no choice about it. Stick around, Samantha. Jillian, what do you think of that observation?
So I think one of the important things, and I think this is what a lot of callers and commenters are alluding to at this point, is that being the ability to go home and for it to not be a financial burden on your parents or to be able to go home at all is a luxury, right? There are a lot of people who cannot go home because their parents cannot afford to have another person there or maybe don't want another person there. Mm-hmm. And those people do have to find a way to make it on their own, even if their job isn't paying as much as they want to. And then I think there's also the circumstance of people who, you know, are home because they cannot find a job, they cannot find work, they cannot find gainful employment, and they're just trying to make things work in their parents' home, you know, with limited means to make ends meet. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the other side of this that isn't, you know, the cushy, I'm going home and having a great time with my parents, and then I'll eventually move out into a nice place of my own.
Yeah, it's just the way it is. Samantha, I really appreciate your call from Charleston. Kirk in Waterloo, Iowa. You're on the air, Kirk. Thanks for calling. What's your story, your observation?
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to comment that if these people are able to stay at home longer like that, they're getting along a lot better with their parents than we did. You know, I think this is speaking very generally, but graduating high school late 60s, early 70s, I think we rebelled against more of a authoritarian style of parenting. And so to me, it's very encouraging that these people are even able to stay home, that the relationship hasn't been damaged or even ruined by the time you got out of high school. And, you know, I think a lot of cases with people my age, it took some years to repair that relationship.
Yeah,
and, you know, I got after I was married in 1975, due to economics, my wife and I did live with my parents, and that lasted about 3 weeks.
Oh, in and out, as they say.
Yeah, it just didn't work. So I think somehow, you know, these parents are doing a good job of maintaining a better relationship with their kids.
That is really interesting. I mean, there was certainly a generation for whom it was it wasn't unthinkable, Kim, as you point out. People did it. But back in the age of, you know, don't trust anyone over 30 and all that, there was a kind of age schism culturally. At least people thought so, Kim, and a lot of people just would do anything to avoid that. They had to be out.
Yeah, we've tried to tease this out a couple of times in our research to see if there is a different nature of the relationship between parents and adult children today than there was, say, a generation ago. Mm-hmm. And it's been really difficult. You hear a lot about boomers and the way that they relate to their kids, who are most of whom are millennials today. It's hard to put raw numbers on that. But we did sort of measure the perception among boomers, whether there was a bigger generation gap between them and their parents than there is. And then we asked, you know, today's young adults about the generation gap between them and their parents. Mm-hmm. And we found that there really wasn't that much of a difference, you know, putting that sort of historical perspective on it. So there's still a sense among young adults that there's a gap between their views and their outlook and their elders. But there does seem to be a different way of relating these days. It's just hard to, as I said, hard to put raw numbers to that.
Jillian, do you have the sense that when these two generations live under one roof, it's grating on each of them, or somehow we've come to a place where there's always going to be tensions, but it's not such a big deal?
Yeah, so I think this is really interesting, and this is probably very personal to each person and their parents. But I think when you leave home at, you know, 17, 18, 19 years old, kind of at the height of teenage angst and wanting to be out on your own, and very much seeing your parents as your parents and a hindrance to your independence, you know, you're still looking at them from a child's perspective in a way. And then I think if you are able to, or you find yourself in the circumstance of going home at some point before the age of 34, and you've had the ability to kind of become an adult on your own and come into your own, you're able to relate to them in a different way and kind of see each other, hopefully, as adults. And I think when those situations do arise, it's kind of the best case scenario, because now you guys can relate to each other on a different, more adult level. And I think that could be more helpful in the long run.
Kim, one interesting potential impact of this, there's been a lot of talk about how in the housing market, a lot of houses that people expected to be on the market are not. So the housing stock is tight. That drives up prices. Ironically, it makes it harder perhaps for millennials to get into the housing market. And people have speculated that it's possible that there are fewer houses on the market because boomers are hanging on to them so that their children can live under the same roof because they need to. What about it, Kim?
I don't have, research to speak to that directly. We have done some sort of broad measures of people's aspirations to own a home and whether that's still part of the kind of fabric of society and the American dream and all that. And there are indications that millennials view that as somewhat less important in terms of it being a ticket to the middle class or some sort of status. So I think there has been a little bit of a psychological shift along those lines. I'm not sure about boomers holding on to homes. I mean, we all know that during the recession, people took a huge hit in terms of their overall wealth, which is for most people is tied up in the value of their home. So people have, maybe tried to hold on to them in order to build that wealth back up.
Or I don't know. I mean, Redfin, the online real estate outfit, they did a survey and found of homeowners aged 55 to 64 and found 1/5 of them still have adult children at home. They're saying it's having a big effect on the housing market. I don't know. Lori in Des Moines, Iowa. Lori, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I have a college graduate daughter living at home. She's been with us for about a year. The first 6 months or first 4 months was about her student teaching opportunity was in our hometown.
Yeah.
But we have found that she has no less desire to move out. She just needed to know that she had a contract teaching so that she could afford the rent going forward.
Yep. Just pure realism, like let's have the job before I sign up for the rent.
Right, right. And my question is, I'm curious to know how long these millennials are staying at home with their parents. Are we talking a matter of weeks, months, years, permanently?
Right, that's a great question.
My daughter would not want to do that, although we have a great relationship.
Yeah.
She's as anxious to have her own place as we're anxious for her to have her own place.
Lori, let me ask. Kim, how about it? Did you look at the duration of time at home with parents?
We didn't. In our earlier studies, we've looked at the share of millennials who are living at home or said that they did for a time and then moved back out. And a significant share were in and out within, a couple of years' time. So it wasn't necessarily a long-term arrangement. But we haven't, in terms of our analysis of the census data, we haven't looked at the length of stay. That would be a really interesting thing to explore.
I mean, in particular, if it's becoming just, in some cultures, people don't necessarily move out. There's a family house and, you may have three generations in it sometimes. Who knows what's coming here? Catherine in Austin, Texas. You're on, Catherine.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yeah, so I definitely fit the mold. I'm 31. I went to Berkeley for school, graduated in 07, had a corporate job in San Francisco, ditched that.
Yeah.
Now I'm just saving money and living with my parents, and it's actually really awesome.
What is your goal? Are you working now, Catherine?
Yeah, I work. I work at a couple of breweries, and I teach yoga. What a combo. And I found it to be this really sweet kind of bonding time as an adult with my parents, and it's been great, but I know it's really luxurious and fortunate that I have the opportunity to do so, and usually the reaction from my friends is, oh man, I wish I could do that and just save money to go travel. So
you had a corporate job in San Francisco. You got out of that to teach yoga and work at breweries. Were you looking for a lifestyle change, and your living with your parents made that possible? Is that the sort of way?
Exactly. Totally. I live in, paycheck to paycheck, and it's nice not have to worry about that right now.
And how about your parents? Are they drumming their fingers on the kitchen table, or are they happy to have you?
No, my mom always says, you can stay here forever, and I think, oh my God, let's hope this is not forever. But it's as great as it is.
Good luck on your path, Catherine. I appreciate that. And one more, Savannah, Georgia. William, you're on. What's your story?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
I've been listening, and I have a lot to say.
We got 1 minute, William. I'm sorry for that. You're on.
Hey, that's okay. My dad's a dentist. So I grew up in a good family. But back in 2008, I guess he overstretched and lost everything. So I ended up dropping out of school at like 17. But, I just kept working and got my real estate broker's license and contractor's license.
Yeah.
And, I own my house. I did it through owner financing. And, rent is high around here, but the payment on my house is only about $500. So it's definitely doable. I work construction.
Yep.
And it works out.
So out at 17, and you made it work, William. You just kept at it until it worked.
Yes, sir. I mean, it was hard, definitely. You know, there was times where I had no money and lived with a bunch of roommates in a crappy house, but it's finally coming together now at 23.
17 to 23, got the house on his own, got the job, got the career. A million ways to do it these days. William, congratulations. We're happy to know yours. Thanks for calling. William's gone. He's a busy man. He's got work to do. Kim Parker and Jillian White, it's been great to have you with us to look at this. Kim at the Pew Research Center, Director of Social Trends Research there. We appreciate all the work you guys do, and this is a really interesting report. Thanks for joining us today, Kim.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed it.
And Jillian White, love your reporting on everything about millennials, Senior Associate Editor at The Atlantic. Thank you so much for joining us, Jillian.
Thanks so much, Tom.
Listeners, good luck whatever your living arrangements, whatever your relations with your parents. We wish you the best. You can continue this conversation, get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm on Twitter at Tom Ashbrook, NPR. This is On Point.